So when I called you earlier, you were at the gym, or when I text you, rather. Mm-hmm. So are you still going hard at the gym?
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm still getting my lift on, like, 6 days a week with one day rest.
6 days currently. A week?
Yeah.
And that's, like, one thing that was, I'd say, absent from this film that has been, amongst all the other ones, like, very consistent, where you have this somewhat normal actor who's, you know, known for their theatrical presence and their acting prowess, but not necessarily for their ripped abs and shredded chest. And you didn't get to see a lot of Benedict Cumberbatch with his shirt off, even though there's a ton of Cumber bitches, which I've to find out are females that are in love with Benedict Cumberbatch. But he didn't. It wasn't one of those movies where, you know, he knew he was going to have his top off, so he had to prepare for it. I mean, I'm getting ready. I'm getting shredded. But this is for me. I'm never going to take my top off. You know what I mean? So maybe I'm a little... There's a little Doctor Strange in me. Pal? Hello? So this week we are talking about Doctor Strange. I actually think that we are going to make it to our countdown to Endgame, like final scenario where we get to actually watch all of the movies leading up to the movie, the premiere of Endgame. I didn't think we were going to.
I think it's possible.
Yeah, I thought our schedule wasn't just going to let us do it, and I thought we were going to start putting out shit episodes for it, but. You know, in my opinion, I think we've put out some pretty good ones. Yeah. And right now, being at Doctor Strange, this is episode 14 of our Countdown to Endgame series. And this one was a movie that was more about the psychedelic and the spiritual, which is very different from the other ones. Mm-hmm. And did you know a lot about Doctor Strange in the comics?
Oh, yeah. Like, especially when he was, like, first conceived, they had to nerf him, like, way back in the day.
Like, nerf him.
Yeah, so Doctor Strange in the comics became so ludicrously powerful that literally nothing could defeat him. Like nothing.
Oh, I got it.
And so
okay.
And so they had to like put a comic episode in where he was causing like so much mishap and mayhem that these beings that actually grant the mystic art powers took some of that power away. Like that's how they nerfed him. Because they went, "Hey man, like you're not using these powers properly." So we're going to, like, cut it in half, you know, because...
Well, and the closer and closer you get to a superhero being godlike, you know, when we talk about Thor and Captain Marvel with these powers that are just infinite, you have to put a limitation on it.
Like, he basically had the Infinity Gauntlet without the Infinity Gauntlet. Like, he could warp reality, space, time, dimensions. Like he had almost all the powers that the Gauntlet would give you with just his mystic arts. And so
with the time stone or just like own after he.
Yeah, exactly. So this is before like the Infinity Stone concept was even a thing. He just had these powers because he was just that damn good of a sorcerer.
Does he become the Sorcerer Supreme?
Oh, yeah. But like not only was he like the Sorcerer Supreme, he was the nothing could ever beat him ever. So like no villain could touch him. Like you would have the comics during that like peak. Strange, where this villain would come in, but you'd go, "Oh, okay. Well, the guy's so powerful anyway; he's just gonna think him out of existence. Like, even if he's physically stronger, he's just gonna go, 'Oh, you know what? I'm actually gonna warp time, and you actually don't exist anymore. Bye.'" And like, there's the fight.
Just make his own. Just make his own plan. Make his own world. Mm-hmm. And that's in this one. It doesn't really allude to him being that powerful.
No.
I mean, it does at one point, but you could still see he has some, I guess, confidence issues with his inability to use his hands. But he understands that he could use the internal spiritual awakening that he's had. And, you know, it starts out with someone who is very arrogant, which is another thing that I was thinking about as thematic as all of these goes. And I don't know if it was Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and all these individuals, Larry Lieber, who were writing these characters, who may have just been obsessed with the idea or the psychology behind that narcissistic, I guess like almost sociopathic, very selfish, like highly driven male character that, you know, was in some ways very powerful before they got the powers. But they had to learn a lesson in, I guess, just learn a lesson that they're not the center of the universe. Yeah. And in this one, we see it again where he's this amazing doctor who mm-hmm. can perform these surgeries
without Tony the Stark use of medicine.
Modern technology.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. But you see he has a major downfall, and then he's got to deal with the fact that he's not the best anymore and he's not going to get these powers back, and he has to succumb to this spiritual side of life, which he just fucking thinks is bogus from the beginning.
Yep.
I like this movie, and I like the characters introduced at the beginning, like that doctor who hates Doctor Strange, and Rachel McAdam, who plays somewhat of his love, or like an ex-love interest.
Love interest, yeah.
Yeah, and she plays into that, like she loves him, but she knows so much about, it's like Pepper Potts.
Mm-hmm.
She knows how arrogant he is, yet she knows that internal there's something inside of him that just needs to be pulled out that, you know, she cares about. And even, you know, towards the end of the movie when she kisses him on the cheek, she still, I guess, loves him, but she knows they're not gonna, you know, be together.
Correct. Yeah. Like she's already essentially done the relationship arc before we even got the movie. Is what happened. Mm-hmm. And yeah, now it's the post breakup, oh, we're friends now, but I still care about you, like part of the story. So we don't even get that in this film. And in terms of him having a love interest, we just him having a really good friend, you know, in Rachel McAdams. And then you get, you know, Mordo also introduced like as kind of his friend in terms of like the mystic arts side of it, because like he's the one who kind of takes him in. No, but go on.
Right. And then so that story arc. So, you know, he gets in a major car accident, and the doctor that he hates, like, has essentially just ruined his hands by putting all the pins in it. Well, he thinks that he ruined his hands.
Yeah.
And then every effort after that to fix his hands doesn't work. He goes broke. And that scene where he's like holding his hands on the glass in his apartment building, he's turned Rachel McAdam away. And he's just dealing with this pain and loss, like, and you see that he's come to the end of his rope. And that's where his physical therapist, what does he call him? He calls him bachelor degree.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is that's a very funny joke for anybody who has graduated college. They may feel a little inadequate by that joke. Mm-hmm. For me, not attending college and having a pretty good paying job, I feel like okay about the joke to laugh at it, but I can see how that may offend some people. Mm-hmm. But
we've dealt with people like that in real life, where like they have a PhD and they're like, you must call me doctor. Oh, okay, doctor.
Well, there's a hilarious interchange between him and is it Mills Mikkelsen?
Mads Mikkelsen.
Mads Mikkelsen, mm-hmm. where he says like, you know, it's doctor, and he's like, Mr. Doctor. Mm-hmm.
It's strange. Like,
no, it's doc. It's strange. Maybe a little.
Yeah, but who am I to judge? Like, it's just,
yeah,
it's just,
dude, it's so funny. I love him as an actor. Mm-hmm. Side note.
I like him as an actor because a lot of the things he acts in, he doesn't understand, which I find like hilarious, because a lot of actors won't take jobs like because they don't understand like the plot or the script or the world. He does a lot of films mm-hmm. and then they ask him like, why did you do this? And he's like, I like the way it sounded. And they'll go, oh, do you understand the world? He's like, not a fucking bit. He's like, I have no mm-hmm. idea what's going on in this thing. And, like, I love how honest he is in that, but he just thought it would be a cool movie to do, so he does it.
He meets Doctor Strange after not, you know, really getting any progress in his physical attributes. He then goes to find out if what the physical therapist said was true mm-hmm. With Benjamin Bratt?
Yeah.
Bratt?
Yeah.
I'm at a loss for names right now, and I know it's on the internet, but, you know, I'm going to play this old school and just, like, go by memory.
Yeah, exactly.
He was someone who's paralyzed from the waist down, and he actually recognized Doctor Strange when he approached him on the basketball court mm-hmm. by saying, like, you turned me away because I wasn't, you know, I wasn't going to make you a superstar, or I wasn't worth the money. He also is just kind of showcasing again Doctor Strange's inability to help others and just focus on what he wants to do so that he can be, that's what got him in the car accident in the first place when he was trying to look at those different surgeries
don't
he could participate
text and drive.
In. Or don't try to solve a fucking, like a surgical issue via iPad, you know, when you're speeding a Lamborghini or Ferrari on a rainy night.
Mm-hmm.
But he finds him and he says that he can heal himself. if he believes in it, but he has to go far away, and he has to go to where the Sorcerer Supreme reigns, and where, you know, he mm-hmm. could potentially heal himself spiritually, which he's not necessarily prepared for. So why don't you tell me a little bit about that journey?
Yeah, so he goes to Kathmandu, where he's told to go, and then there's a compound called Kamatage that he needs to go. So he's trying to find this place, and he's even dressed in, like, almost like poor man's garb that you see. Like, instead of being in, like, a nice suit and tie and everything in his previous life, you could call it, he's basically rock bottom. He's, like, the lowest of the low right now.
Well, and that fake beard.
Mm-hmm. Oh, ooh. Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, the fake beard. Definitely the pube beard. Pretty bad. Is what I called it.
Yeah.
It was real bad. But he eventually, like, finds it and, like, but is, and is taken in, like, initially, but he's still very arrogant because he thinks the Ancient One is, like, some sort of super, like, surgeon instead. You know, how did you fix, you know, this guy being a paraplegic? She's like, oh, no, right. Like, I didn't fix him. Like, I just gave him the tools for him to fix himself. And he's like, hurdy. And then she sends him on the biggest acid trip of his life, in a sense.
That scene was, my son was watching it mm-hmm. with me, and he's never seen Doctor Strange. He's, mm-hmm. I think he's watched the majority of the other ones. Yeah. He's 6 years old. And the scene where all the little hands come out of his fingers, mm-hmm. it's a picture I also posted on Instagram. Yeah, but, and then they start crawling out of his body, and then they form his face.
Yeah.
is a scene that we have never seen in the MCU up until this point. And then, I mean, not to mention all the scenes of the, like, Inception, Christopher Nolan type mm-hmm. fucking scenes where the city is folding in on itself and the cars are going over the streets that are folding into each other. I mean, it's like a mind fuck, but it's so well done.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
In that scene especially.
Oh, yeah. God, the trippy part was amazing, like, to me, because I went, Jesus, like the amount of sensory overload that you're experiencing, mm-hmm. they want you to be like, oh, okay, this is the amount of overload that he's getting as well. Like, his mind is just so out of it. And then when he, like, comes back to the real world, like, especially after the Ancient One, like, hits his astral body out, that's when he kind of, like, wakes up and goes, oh, there's more than meets the eye. Like, in reality is when he finally gets it and does that, you know, teach me moment.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ancient One gives him the old bye, Felicia, is what happens, and, like, kicks him out. But, like, Mordo convinces the Ancient One because of how persistent he is, you know, and going, hey, like, look at him. He's been out there for, like, a week. You know, give him a chance type deal.
But she senses something in him that was similar to Mads Mikkelsen's character. Remind me of his name?
Caecilius.
In this movie? Caecilius. So, and that's something that she fears, because we find out later that she also pulls her power from the dark realm.
The dark dimension.
Is it? The dark dimension. So, and like with Dormammu, so we see that her extended life is from that, but, you know, we also hear, like, her intentions behind it. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things where a student of hers was, you know, went to the dark side, and she doesn't want it. She could see a lot of the traits within Stephen Strange. Mm-hmm. I would say something that I do know about this is they whitewashed this character. Is that correct? Because it wasn't supposed to be played by a white woman. It's an Asian male, right? In the comics?
Yeah. The Ancient One is definitely Asian in the comics. And so, yeah, that was some backlash that the movie actually got when they originally casted the Ancient
One. Yeah, that's what I remember hearing about.
Yeah, it was not the best reception, I would say.
But Tilda Swinton is an amazing mm-hmm. actress, and she, like, shaving her head and committing to this role, she's solid.
Yeah.
I have no problems with her. Mm-hmm. It was the fact that I knew that it should have been somebody else. Mm-hmm. And just represent it. I mean, they're in fucking Kathmandu.
Yeah, the
is purist. Mordo, is Mordo correct?
So Mordo is, like, more or less, yeah. Like he actually fits the bill pretty well in terms of the comics, as well as, like, his nature. Like, you know, being, like, the straight shooter, like, follows the rules mm-hmm. and everything as well. Like, the character was actually portrayed pretty well.
Well, I just read the Invincible Iron Man, I think, mm-hmm. or the Incredible Iron Man. I read this, like, 5-book series, And Nick Fury in it is a white guy who's always chomping on a cigar. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's another one where, like, obviously the right choice was made to have Nick Fury played by Samuel L. Jackson. But I think the one of the reasons that it was he was cast was they started what I heard, they started writing this one series of books where they were, like, taking his likeness. Mm-hmm. And when they took his likeness and then I think they were going to sue Samuel L. Jackson and his managers or his agents were like, well, here's the deal. If you ever cast this role, just you have to offer it to him first. And I think that was the settlement. I don't know if that's a fucking rumor or not. Again, I'm winging it here, but like it's incredible how things have changed and the decisions that are made to cast certain people. You know, it like may cause an uproar and some of them just kind of go under the rug. Because I don't know how many people may have been upset or like misunderstood or maybe didn't even fucking care about the Nick Fury thing because Samuel L. Jackson's in everything. But this Tilda Swinton thing was a big deal.
Oh, yeah. To me, it was like an internet big deal. You had like a very vocal minority.
Trolls.
That were just mad that it wasn't exactly like how they wanted, but then you have to like remember it's a cinematic universe. Like if you want the Ancient One in the comics, go read the comics. You know, and so sometimes you have to make like different decisions. Like when Chris Evans got casted as Captain America and went, but he's already like in the Fantastic Four. You can't cast him in two movies at once. Like it went like, stupid.
Oh well, also in Iron Man, the series I was reading. Yeah. It takes place in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And so when in Vietnam, when he gets the shrapnel in his chest, Yinsen, who's helping him, is actually an older Asian male. And they build the Iron Man suit and they bust out. And then, like, you know, he perfects the suit after that. But, like, it's a very different vibe. And to your point, everybody's going to have a problem with how people recreate it and how people like the decisions that people make. Mm-hmm. But in this one, if I hadn't known that, I wouldn't have fucking cared. Yeah. I still don't care. Mm-hmm. I remember that was one of the big deals when I heard this. Anyway, you continue. So they're training. He's still arrogant. He's getting a connection with Wong. Him and Wong are getting like a little bit more, like you see their dynamic kind of forming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where Wong, like he's also like the straight and narrow, but like I think Wong as a character also understands that the rules need to be broken sometimes. Unlike Mordo.
Yeah, he's listening to Beyonce in the library. Right,
yeah, unlike Mordo, who's like, oh, you can never break the rules. But we do get essentially some like more lore in this one. Like Mordo shows him the staff of the Living Tribunal, and that's the first time the Living Tribunal is mentioned. So we know this being exists like in the MCU now, or else it would have never been mentioned. So that gives like Doctor Strange a potential conflict later, because in one of the comics, the Living Tribunal was going to destroy Earth because of the stupidity that Doctor Strange was committing in terms of like using his powers.
Give me a brief overview on the Living Tribunal.
So the Living Tribunal is like number two on the power scale. So you have like the one above all, who's like the most powerful thing in the Marvel like universe, period. And then the Living Tribunal is number two. Like Thanos punched this entity with the Infinity Gauntlet. And like full power, and the Living Tribunal took a step back. That's all it did to him. So then he flicked Thanos to the other side of the universe, like is what he did. Like that.
And his staff belongs to them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so, and he has three heads. So the Living Tribunal never makes a decision until all three heads agree. And so, if two of the heads are like, we need to kill humanity, and it says we need to save it, then it's not going to do it. It needs 100% consensus. So when Strange was committing some tomfoolery and brought a being from another dimension and that almost destroyed the universe, he went, all three heads went, hey, humanity is too much of a danger to the rest of the universe. I'm wiping out humanity. Like,
did you ever see those twins that had two heads? The Siamese twins, the blondes?
Ooh, yeah.
They're teachers now. Mm-hmm. And Brandy was watching an interview of them and they finish each other's sentences, which is it is mind blowing. It reminded me of you talk about something having three heads. Mm-hmm. It's a really cool story, but it's so interesting to watch them with share the same thought and finish each other's sentences, but they don't share a brain. They just share a spinal column and stem. Mm-hmm. that goes into, I think, two split spinals. Anyway, okay.
But
back to the story.
Right.
Living Tribunal, okay, the staff of it. And then we start to see Caecilius and his plan to bring about a ruler of worlds that's going to come and destroy.
Yeah, right? Essentially, his quest is for everlasting life. And since Dormammu's realm exists outside of time, well, what better way to have everlasting life than to go somewhere where time doesn't even exist? Right. But and so, like, that's his, like, big plan is to get, like, Earth absorbed into the same dimension so that he'll never die.
That's the overall outcome that he's trying to achieve with his plan?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, is him. So, like, his version of ultimate power is, like, being able to live forever, because then he's got all the time in the world.
Yeah, and I guess that's the theme of this movie is, I mean, there's a lot of selfish behavior, selfish needs for each individual, with him wanting to live forever. And, I mean, he worships Dormammu and wants to serve him. But, you know, we think that the Sorcerer Supreme has intentions similar to that, where, you know, she's taking that so she could live forever, which is a selfish need. And then, you know, Stephen Strange has had needs his whole life where it just serves his purpose. Mm-hmm. You don't, like, Wong and Mordo are really about serving, I guess, the greater good. But ultimately, everybody is trying to get what they need done in this movie. And you see Doctor Strange understand that he has to take away, like, you know, what his self-worth is, what, like, he needs. Mm-hmm. And I believe Rachel McAdams and the Sorcerer Supreme both say that to him, like, you have to stop thinking of you and thinking about others. And that is ultimately how he saves the world. I kept stopping and starting the movie because I work at my home gym. Little, you know, shout out there for fitness.
Ooh,
holler.
Hashtag
but
fitness.
That last scene, I started it again to finish my workout, where he's battling Dormammu, and it's the, you know, I've come to bargain.
Yep,
and it's over and over and over.
The ultimate meme.
Dude, that scene is so good.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, it is,
dude.
Like, the ultimate Marvel meme. Is like anybody who's been in the MCU, if you say I've come to bargain, you know the exact movie that is being talked about.
Yeah.
And yeah, I thought it was a really, really cool thing that they did, because it lets you know just how powerful the Time Stone is. You know, where
they,
where that thing is just, like, so ludicrously powerful that a being that exists outside of time can be a victim of it.
Can be a victim of it, and he, like, basically jailed him, he said. You know, like, this is your prison. You're my prisoner. And I love it, too, because, like you mentioned, it's this giant being that is, I mean, it's extraterrestrial. It's also, like, what's another word for it? It's like, it's not physical.
Well. Yeah.
Right. It's so all powerful, and you think, well, he's not gonna win, and he wins by basically irritating him and being this, like, fly, you know, who won't stop buzzing, and he keeps killing him over and over, and that's that selflessness piece where he's saying, I'm gonna go through this pain so that people on Earth can live, and that's a major, major, like, to this movie, but also I guess it's a beginning to Doctor Strange's legacy. Mm-hmm. The first time he does it, when he comes back, and Dormammu starts to repeat the same sentence that he had said before,
but then he realizes
what's going on here.
Yeah.
And that's such a cool epic scene.
Because it's the first time you see this being who, like, the concept of time has hit him, because he's never understood what time is. And then it...
I didn't get that.
Yeah. Because Dormammu is a being in the dark dimension, exists outside of time, so he doesn't know the concept. So the reason why he's like, what's happening here, is it's the first time he's ever experienced time before. And so he's confused as all hell, because he goes like, what the hell just happened? Because there's never been a time jump in his dimension ever. And so when that happens, especially when he goes like, I'm going to kill you over and over again, like, he still doesn't understand time, so he thinks eventually he'll win, but he doesn't realize that the rewind button keeps getting hit, like, over and over. He doesn't understand the concept, so that's why he eventually loses, because he doesn't know how to win when time comes up, because he's never fought it before. And so it's like having a perpetual fly buzz over your head would annoy you to the point to where you would, like, do anything. It's like, you know, the Chinese water torture, where it's just, like, one drip of water, like, going on your forehead, like, over and over again. Where, yeah.
Yeah, but you could also assume that a villain would also relish the opportunity to try to kill something with different ways each time.
Mm-hmm.
But at one point, it would get super annoying, and you'd be like, okay, I can't keep fucking doing this.
Yeah.
And that's when he finally says, let me loose. Like, and he said, well, here's the bargain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you leave, take Caecilius and all of his buddies with you, and never come to Earth again. And he's like, fine. And, like, walks away basically all mad, like a little kid. You know, he had to take his ball and go home, is what happened.
And he takes the Caecilius and his followers away, and they go away in ashes, which is pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And they turn to these, like, skeletal burnt beings as they float away, which, I mean, I don't know if that was supposed to, probably not, but I mean, I think as we look at it in reflection of Infinity War, it resembles how people went to ashes. But we see, after that happens, we see Mordo get really fucking pissed off. He was already pissed off and upset that the leader, the person that he had given his, like, everything to,
mm-hmm.
in the Sorcerer Supreme, she's now dead.
Yep.
Right before that, he found out that she was using mm-hmm. that dark energy. And so now he's like, who the fuck am I supposed to believe? And now that he sees Doctor Strange use the Infinity Stone to control and manipulate time and death, because he brings Wong back.
Yep.
He's like, this is what I signed up for, and I gotta go.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, like, departs.
Yep. And then probably for Doctor Strange 2, he'll be the villain, because you see that setup when he takes.
I was gonna ask you that.
Yeah, because to me, like, he takes the power away, and Mordo does become a villain in the comics, so it's a proper arc that Strange would have to face.
Let's go into that then.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go into that. So first, we'll talk about the Stan Lee cameo. So they're fighting on the street. They're running from Caecilius, and on one of the moments where the street bends, they fly into a bus, and Stan Lee is reading, like, a spiritual book,
mm-hmm.
And he's laughing at all of it. I don't know if it was a Kama Sutra book or what it was, but he was, like, laughing his ass off, which was that's a quick little cameo,
yeah.
But it shows he's still in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have to recognize you for the fact that every time you do your episodes without me, you do the Stan Lee cameo and you speak of trivia. And every time I forget to do that. So we'll make sure to follow that. We'll follow that within this episode,
mm-hmm.
and every episode that I move forward, I'm going to keep you in mind that, your high success to all of those expectations.
Yeah.
So thank you, Kyle.
Got a high success rate.
Yeah. The, post-credit scene, the first one is, we see him and Thor. And we find out later that that's a part of Thor Ragnarok,
mm-hmm.
that was actually filmed, I believe, by, what's his name?
Oh.
Taika Waititi.
Taika Waititi. Yeah, I think.
Yes.
I think you're correct on that.
And that scene right there is highly comical in general. And that's where you get to see Chris Hemsworth just fucking killing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the post-credit scene is Mordo taking that energy, that power away that helped Benjamin Pratt walk, in that, you know, it shows that he has deviated from everything he knows because he's so frustrated to know that the people that he cared about and the people that cared about him and taught him everything he knows about the greater good and taking care of the world were actually using evil powers to do it. So now he's like, well, I'm just going to be evil.
Yeah,
then.
The world has too many
right.
sorcerers.
Is that essentially what it is?
Fake is what
okay.
he says to the guy. I mean, like, in the comics, like, he was a student of the Ancient One, but he did try to murder the Ancient One at one point. So they didn't show that. Like, they showed him as, like, this really, really good guy in the films, but so he went from good guy to bad guy in the comics, where
I feel like it was, like, complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like he didn't really know what was on his mind,
yeah.
but you definitely knew he was on the side for good until, like, that actor really wore it on his face really well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I am challenged with understanding what my role in this world is and
mm-hmm.
what my role within this spiritual movement is and in the sorcerer's ways. And I, like, you really saw it, like, him conflicted. And then I think the best part is when he's like, he identifies that he needs to control the sorcery.
Yeah.
If no one else is going to, and it's just going to, like, you can just have this rando who showed up on our doorstep who, you know, did get, like, learn the ways and become powerful, who can just fucking take the time stone, who nobody touches ever. It yeah. just sits in one of the sanctums, and then he just picks it up and he's like, fuck it, I'm going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first scene we see him use it, which I think the directors, this may be a little bit of the trivia here, I think the director and maybe the producer and some of the people within the conception of this moment, like, I think they were really bought into that apple scene.
Because yeah.
it just seemed like a lot of effort went into that moment to get you to understand how it worked.
Which, yeah, they spent a lot of time on that.
A lot of time. Mm. Probably a lot of money, too.
Oh, yes. Probably a couple million, you know, on that.
So those are that's like the entirety of the movie. And, you know, it ends, like we said, with you mentioning that Mordo is potentially Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange is on the docket for with Disney and Marvel for the next, I don't know, I think it's like 5 years of movies that are coming out. He is, like, Doctor Strange 2 is there. Black Panther 2 is there. The Eternals?
So that's rumored currently. But they haven't given anything official on that. But the rumor is that the Eternals are going to be, like, is going to have the first openly gay character in there. So that's depending on what's going to happen, like, we're going to see, like, more representation in the MCU.
Awesome.
And so, like that's the current talk of the Eternals right now. But nothing's really been confirmed that movie's even in production or even being thought about at this moment.
I think I saw like Angelina Jolie may be attached to it. But anyway, mm-hmm. like this movie itself, what would you give it overall? I think we were on the thumbs technique.
Oh yeah, I like say if two thumbs up is like the best, I'll give it.
Mm-hmm.
I have one thumbs up and then one to the side. Like it's not okay. Yeah, it's not the best. But it's definitely, it's better than Thor: The Dark World, I'll tell you that.
I align with you. I will give the thumb in the side, but the, like, I'm physically doing it right now,
mm-hmm.
but you can't visually see it. Like, I would lift the thumb up a little bit towards the top because I do think because of how this movie changed the game as far as visual effects, because we see a lot of visual effects with Taika Waititi in Ragnarok. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a very different movie.
Yeah.
Black Panther is a very different movie. We talk about the quantum realm with Ant-Man and the Wasp, and they go a little bit deeper in that.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very different as far as visual effects go. But this one was so different and removed from the rest. But Doctor Strange plays such a pivotal part in predicting, like, he makes the actual statement, you know, that we're in the end game now.
Mm-hmm.
That is, and like you said, the meme of, you know, I've come to make a bargain. Like, there's so many things that he contributes to. And he is he's a part of the Illuminati, correct, in the comics?
Yeah. So he's part of, like, yeah, that secret society that, like, Tony Stark had come up with.
That
yeah.
cast off, well, T'Challa's on it.
Mm-hmm.
They cast off Bruce Banner to, and that's where he went to.
Yep.
His own planet, mm-hmm. where he went to Sakaar.
Yep,
and then
they also broke up the Infinity Stones and gave them to different, like, worlds and things, because, like, the Secret Society was created post Infinity Gauntlet, like, so, and so they like passed out the stones to different powers and entities, so no one nation or no one alien race would be in, like, full possession of the stones.
Okay, and this is where I think you may be proud of me. So I read Secret Wars.
Ooh, hey, there
and
you go.
It was pretty. It was cool. In Secret Wars, I mean, one of the reasons that it was hard for me to get into a lot of these comics is they're very complicated, mm-hmm. and overwhelming. I mean, especially if you look at the poster for Endgame, like, look at how many actors and characters are in these movies. Now it's like a Wu-Tang album or a Wu-Tang song, where it's just like every fucking buddy is in it.
Yep.
But this comic had Doctor Doom as the main villain. And he's created, he's God Doom, right? He is now this being that can create, like, different realities.
He's, like,
stuff.
Omnipotent.
Nobody can beat him. I can't, like, go into the particulars because, like I said, there's so much shit happening.
Mm-hmm.
But one of my favorite panels is T'Challa wearing the Infinity Gauntlet, mm-hmm. and that's how they ultimately beat him. So you get to see other people take on and try to, like, wield the power of it. So that's an interesting sidebar conversation that I'll have with you probably later. But like, I love that idea that beyond the movies, like there, so many different people participated in this. And we talk about the Illuminati, they made so many big decisions to disperse the stones, to send Hulk away. But all of these things have major repercussions. Like Hulk comes back for World War Hulk,
yeah,
where he wants to like just crush the world because no one cared about him.
It's, yeah.
But in Infinity War, he's sent back because, you know, what's his name? Heimdall?
Yep, Heimdall.
Idris Elba as Heimdall sends him back because he knows he needs to like send word. And obviously the Hulk isn't fucking beating Thanos, even though I did read in another comic that even though Hulk gets defeated by Thanos, Thanos says he actively tries to avoid Hulk.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I don't know if he fears being beat by him or he just like always beats him by a thread.
So in the comics, the angrier Hulk gets, the more powerful he becomes. So Thanos always...
Oh, like he absorbs it?
So Thanos always targets the Hulk first when he's least angry. Because the longer the fight goes, the more pissed off Hulk gets. And the more powerful he'll become, eventually he'll get stronger than Thanos because he'll be so angry. So that's why Thanos goes after him first in the comics to try to take him out. Because if the Hulk gets sufficiently pissed, Thanos isn't going to be able to do anything anymore to him. And Hulk's going to kick the shit out of him is what will happen.
Got it.
And so, yeah, that's why he's afraid of Hulk. Because if you keep Hulk in the fight for long enough, he's unstoppable.
Which is something I hope they bring back in Endgame. I do hope that they bring a Hulk scene in there where he just smashes a bunch of shit. Even if it's, like, not Thanos, I think that what we didn't get to see in the last one, and I think what built up a great just, I think, story arc for him in this, like, two-parter of Infinity War and Endgame is, you know, when will we see Hulk come out? And if they do it, they may just, like, keep us waiting. But if they do it, and do it right, that could be like an amazing moment in the MCU where it's like the fucking crowd will just go crazy in the theater where it's like, yes, finally, that whole issue that Bruce and Hulk had in Infinity War is solved and we see the Hulk come out and actually fucking smash.
Yeah, because we have a lot to get through, pal. It was like one of his lines in Infinity War.
Oh, yeah.
Another thing, like remember what Heimdall says when he sends Hulk back? He says, let the dark magic flow through my veins one last time. I wonder if he's talking about maybe he has access to the dark dimension at the same time and is able to send Hulk back. Who knows? Doctor Strange opens up a lot of that because of all those dimensions and stuff. You know, did Heimdall also know? Because say if he was like the all-seeing, right? Could he see into different dimensions or different realities as well? So there's like a lot of stuff, or there's the time stone theory of like the time stone that he's giving, like Thanos in Infinity War is not the actual time stone, but a time stone from a different timeline where they win. So that was like another thing that people talked about because it's the only stone that's glowing before it gets into the gauntlet. Like all the other stones don't glow until he puts it in, if that makes sense. But that stone is glowing as it's floating to him. So they're thinking maybe he plucked that from a different timeline, the 14,605, you know, possible futures.
Well, he gave it up really quick.
Mm-hmm. And so did he pluck the time stone from that future where they win? And that's the only way to win, is they give him the time stone from that future. Because then the people from that future are still alive and they can go back and get that stone since it exists. Who knows? Maybe I'm crazy, or maybe they're going to go that fucking deep in a couple weeks.
Well, you're definitely crazy, but we're not going to find out, for another couple of weeks. And the thing with Doctor Strange and this movie, and as we go into Endgame, we are faced with the fact that something incredible is going to happen in this movie. It's 3 hours long. Yep. And then all the movies that they have slated to come out afterwards, I mean, we still have Spider-Man Far From Home that we know is coming out, while the other titles are just kind of like sitting there, still trying to get directors attached. But with all of this like information and action and sequences that we've already been exposed to, the one thing that really like makes me nervous is the fact that, or if I was one of these characters, I guess it would make me nervous, is like, what the fuck is next?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if this happened, that means that there's so much more shit out there. Like, it's Tony says it in Iron Man 3, where he's going through these anxiety attacks, where he's like, you know, what happened in New York, and he went through that wormhole. Like, what else is out there? Like, they're exposed to so many things, and we see it in the Fantastic Four with the Silver Surfer when that being was coming to consume the world, and yep. he leads it to different worlds to consume. Like, there's so much shit just happening in this world that it's, you know, to your point of Doctor Strange where he was omnipotent, like, what, where's the barrier? And there's not, which is why I guess these movies are so fascinating, mm-hmm. and they continue to make us wanna like watch them over and over and just flood the theaters, is because there is so many different like areas and avenues they could take as far as villains and world domination and heroic moments and creating these amazing villainous characters where it will never stop. It doesn't, you know, there's so many comics, different variations, different powers get given and taken away, yep. that we're always going to be given like these amazing opportunities to see different directors' takes on, you know, this plentiful, I guess, bushel of goodies, you know, that is the MCU, mm-hmm. and that is the Marvel Comics, oh, yeah. universe in general. So mm-hmm. It would give me an anxiety attack, like trying to figure out what's next. Like if I was Kevin Feige, I would be like, I would freak out and just sit in a hole and hire some really smart people, which is probably what he does. But his overall composure and ability to like create this universe and make good decisions so that it went the way it did. We now have an amazing universe to follow, but I couldn't imagine being at the helm of that and like pulling those levers and making those decisions,
mm-hmm.
Because it could have gone anywhere. And we see that there was this, you know, Steve Rogers says it in all the Endgame trilogies, is like, or, you know, Nat asks him, you know, do you think this is going to work? Mm-hmm. And he says it has to, because I don't know what I'll do if it doesn't. Like, that's such an amazing statement. And it's a real statement.
Mm-hmm. It basically has like Endgame has to work. Like, it's been essentially the culmination of all this shit. And, like, where do you go from here? Well, we got the multiverse. Hasn't even been touched yet. Like, hasn't even been right. thought about. We haven't even gotten into the cosmic portion yet. Like, nobody's fought the Living Tribunal. Nobody's gone after the one above all. Like, Thanos has an arc in the comics where he goes after the heart of the universe and gets it. And destroys the universe. Not just, like, wipes out half the life or anything, but like the universe itself goes bye-bye. Like it's just done. And then it's just him. And he brings the universe back because he's like, oh, well, it's just me. Like now what do I do? And then he reverses everything. So like there's so many stories, so many places they could take it.
So many possibilities.
Yeah, we haven't even gotten the Thanos copter yet.
Oh, I did see that. It's adorable.
Mm-hmm. They need to have that in Endgame, at least as like a Easter egg or something that he uses for like the Reality Stone. They make a Thanos
copter. Or like a toy or something. Yeah. Yeah, like just like sitting in the background. That would mm-hmm. be amazing. And again, there are so many things that just kind of allude to the comic book world and for the people who are really following along. And those things are, a lot of them are missed by me. And until I read something about it, I don't see it. But I think it's amazing when they do that. So maybe they'll do a Thanos copter. For Kyle, we went into Doctor Strange. We talked about Endgame. We talked about a lot of other shit too, which is something that we have the tendency of doing. Mm-hmm. But next on the docket is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Oh boy.
As we count down to Endgame. So for now, as we wrap up, I want to say thank you for discussing this with me and watching Doctor Strange again. Mm-hmm. And I'll let you know too, for anybody out there that's watching, that this movie is not on Netflix anymore.
Nope, got removed.
And what I'm finding out is, yeah, all the movies that were, I guess, a little bit more current for the MCU and Disney were out. So Civil War, Doctor Strange, I think Guardians was on there.
Mm-hmm.
So what they've done is they've recycled it. They've put the ones that they had on there away. So now the newer ones like Ragnarok's on there, Infinity War, Black Panther, mm-hmm. and I can't remember what else, but I've had to purchase these, which I don't mind doing, but those were the movies that if you looked in my library, they didn't exist because I knew that I could supplement them with Netflix And yep. Now I can't do that, so now I have to own them. So
the sad, sad state of licensing deals.
Yeah, it's sad, but it's cool. It's still in my library, so I'm good with it. I get the extras and the bonus material.
There you
so
go.
For now, Kyle, I will say goodbye, and you will say...
Don't text and drive.
Because we're in the end game now, I guess. Yes. I will attach that to that. All right, peace.
Ta-ta. We'll be right back.